another guest this evening. We appreciate him joining us so very much. Stephen Zunes, professor of politics and director of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. Professor, thank you, first of all, for joining us on short notice tonight.
No problem. I'm happy to contribute. I mean, this is certainly a very disturbing development, and it's important that your listeners, in addition to hearing whatever propaganda we're about to hear from the White House, can hear some other analysis as well.
I'll apologize in advance as these things go in live moments. We'll have to cut our discussion off as soon as the president takes the podium at the White House. We're waiting that right now. But leading up to that, set the stage a little bit in the context beyond just militarily. What, for the lay people who doesn't understand the Middle East the way that you do, what does this mean for stabilization, or perhaps tonight, better put, destabilization of the entire Middle Eastern region, and how that impacts the world?
A number of areas. First of all, Iran is a fairly powerful country. I mean, they've been a regional power on and off for 2,500 years, so they don't like being pushed around and told what to do, like they're some kind of a banana republic or whatever. And they do have the capability of some level of retaliation, despite being outgunned, not just, of course, by the United States, but by Israel as well. And let's remember, there are 40,000 U.S. troops within a few hundred miles of Iran. There are Navy vessels right off the coast. They are all well within range, not just Iranian missiles, but of drones and other weaponry. Also, the risk of that the Persian Gulf itself could be closed to commercial traffic. That's where a good portion of the world's oil comes through. So the impact on not just oil prices, but the global economy as a whole is something to consider. And, of course, there are also these proxy militia that the Iranians effectively control in Iraq, which could turn on U.S. troops there. So it could get out of hand in a hurry.
Yeah, absolutely. We're awaiting the President of the United States, Donald Trump, to address the nation from the White House after striking three nuclear targets in Iran about a couple of hours, 2 to 3 hours ago, as we await the president to come to the podium. Again, Professor Zunes, we heard from a number of countries. You probably have the number off the top of your head better than I. Several Middle Eastern countries.
Everybody heard those names for years as they built this horribly destructive enterprise. Our objective was the destruction of Iran's nuclear enrichment capacity and a stop to the nuclear threat posed by the world's number one state sponsor of terror. Tonight, I can report to the world that the strikes were a spectacular military success. Iran's key nuclear enrichment facilities have been completely and totally obliterated. Iran, the bully of the Middle East, must now make peace. If they do not, future attacks will be far greater and a lot easier. For 40 years, Iran has been saying, death to America, death to Israel. They have been killing our people, blowing off their arms, blowing off their legs with roadside bombs. That was their specialty. We lost over 1,000 people, and hundreds of thousands throughout the Middle East and around the world have died as a direct result of their hate. In particular, so many were killed by their general, Qasem Soleimani. I decided a long time ago that I would not let this happen. It will not continue. I want to thank and congratulate Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. We worked as a team like perhaps no team has ever worked before. And we've gone a long way to erasing this horrible threat to Israel. I want to thank the Israeli military for the wonderful job they've done. And most importantly, I want to congratulate the great American patriots who flew those magnificent machines tonight, and all of the United States military on an operation the likes of which the world has not seen in many, many decades. Hopefully, we will no longer need their services in this capacity. I hope that's so. I also want to congratulate the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dan Rosenkane, spectacular general, and all of the brilliant military minds involved in this attack. With all of that being said, this cannot continue. There will be either peace or there will be tragedy for Iran far greater than we have witnessed over the last 8 days. Remember, there are many targets left. Tonight's was the most difficult of them all, by far, and perhaps the most lethal. But if peace does not come quickly, we will go after those other targets with precision, speed, and skill. Most of them can be taken out in a matter of minutes. There's no military in the world that could have done what we did tonight, not even close. There has never been a military that could do what took place just a little while ago. Tomorrow, General Kane, Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth will have a press conference at 8 a.m. at the Pentagon. And I want to just thank everybody, and in particular, God. I want to just say we love you, God, and we love our great military. Protect them. God bless the Middle East. God bless Israel, and God bless America. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Todd, we can't hear you.
Apologies for that. Sometimes these live things, that's the way it goes. It was my fault for not having my mic on. That was President of the United States, Donald Trump, live from the White House, on telling us much of what we had already known this evening, and that was that the United States has already struck three different Iranian nuclear facilities, deemed by the White House as quote-unquote successful. And for the first time, at least known, the so-called bunker-busting bombs were delivered by two bombers in the Middle East. And those planes are now, according to Trump and the White House and the Pentagon, in safe airspace and out of harm's way. Joining us to break this all down once again, as we did before the speech there, joining us live via StreamYard, we appreciate it, Professor of Politics and Director of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco, Stephen Zunes. Professor Zunes, your thoughts initially from the president's remarks. I'm not sure you'd call it a speech, but remarks tonight.
Pretty facile, frankly, even by Trump standards. I mean, one can jump, of course, to the falsehoods that Iran was somehow responsible for 1,000 Americans being killed in Iraq. The vast majority of American casualties were from these Ba'athist and Sunni and other militia that were actually opposed by Iran. They were not a major factor in the casualties of American forces. I wrote about that some years ago when the Bush administration was pushing that line. And he tried to blame Iran for all sorts of, exaggerating their power. It kind of reminds me, of course, of during the Cold War. I mean, there are obviously very negative things about the Soviet system, just like there are about the Iranian system, but the claims that the Soviets were somehow behind every leftist revolution or every, a challenge to American hegemony was grossly exaggerated, and it certainly is the case here and regarding Iran. But what was most disturbing about what he said to me was he said that we're giving them the opportunity of peace, that is, surrender effectively, that is to not respond to this unprovoked attack. And I can't imagine that Iran won't try to retaliate in some way. And assuming they do, whether it be against American ships in the Gulf or American forces and bases in Iraq, or missile attacks on American soldiers in Bahrain, Qatar, United Arab Emirates. I mean, we got troops all over the place there.
Right.
Obviously, he's making it very clear that we will respond to those. Now, this is not going to be like Iraq in terms of U.S. forces, being bogged down in a bloody counterinsurgency war. But this is not boom, 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 we're done, like he's implying here. Mm-hmm. This could be the beginning of a protracted conflict. And there will be American casualties, and there will be a grossly disproportionate Iranian casualties, the majority of whom, as with the Israeli attacks, are likely to be civilians.
Professor Zunes, give us a sense. Not all of us, of course, are experts, and I would say probably a few Wisconsinites are in this part of the world in the Middle East. In your role as Director of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco, help the layperson in Wisconsin, if you can, understand geographically about these targets, why they're strategic that the United States hit tonight, and why these people that might be a place like Saudi Arabia, who is generally considered an ally of the United States, joined in a very pointed letter against what happened earlier tonight.
Of course. I mean, virtually all our allies came out against the U.S. invasion of Iraq. That didn't stop us. They've come out against the unconditional support for Israel's ongoing slaughter in Gaza. That hasn't stopped us there either. We don't frankly care what they think. Andy, this is really what this is about, frankly. It's about hegemony in the region. It's not about the nuclear program. Mm-hmm. If we wanted to get rid of the nuclear program, we wouldn't have pulled out of the Iranian nuclear deal. This is about exerting U.S. hegemony. It's basically saying what as the first President Bush said after the Gulf War, the lesson is what we say goes. And, for a country that's had a 2,500-year history of being a major regional power, they don't like being pushed around like that. This is not going to make them more rational. This is going to, this is even opponents of the regime are already speaking out against the U.S.-backed Israeli war against them, and I imagine even in stronger now. So if the goal is regime change, it certainly set that back because, people tend to rally around the flag when they're being bombed. So I think there's we may very likely see the beginnings of a protracted conflict. Now, these three sites, they're in the heart of the country. Some of them are near major population centers. So there's a concern of if these cause some kind of radiation leaks. I mean, this would be this could be the equivalent of a core meltdown of a nuclear power plant, and we've seen the damage that could do in places like Chernobyl and Fukushima. And even if we don't have a full scale a release of radiation on that scale, there are certain other pretty dangerous chemicals that are part of the uranium reprocessing system that are very likely in the atmosphere. So this could be a major environmental disaster as well, and people are going to die.
You're listening to a special Civic Media News report at this hour. It's 12 minutes past the hour, 9 o'clock across the state of Wisconsin. As we react to the comments, we'll call it, of President Donald J. Trump, who addressed the nation about 5 to 10 minutes ago on the fact that the United States launched strikes on three Iranian nuclear facilities earlier this evening. And President Trump has said that all of the planes, predominantly B-2s that were used in these so-called defense buster bombs, was a success. And the American forces are safe for now. We're talking about the reaction of this with Stephen Zunes. He's a professor of politics and director of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. He joins us via StreamYard. Stay tuned. We're going to get back to our regular programming and Max Inc. Radio in just a moment. But first of all, Professor, tell us a little bit about the pretext for this. Iran has been, quote unquote, close to developing a nuclear bomb for quite some time. You heard when Donald Trump was out of power, he was saying that it was former President Obama who was going to, quote unquote, get us into war. Now it turns out that when he's back in the White House, it was actually Trump who okays the bombing tonight. One of the Trump administration's claimed that Iran could produce these weapons within weeks, as they said.
That's utterly nonsense, and it's directly contrary to the intelligence reports from his own administration. This line that they were in a very short time developing nuclear bombing. Netanyahu was saying that back in the 1990s. It's been a running joke, actually, that Iran is within just a few weeks of developing a bomb. It's a lot more than that. There's no indication that they want to go in that direction. They certainly since Trump pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal, they've not been limited in terms of the reprocessing. So they have developed isotopes to a point where they could again go in that direction within a couple of years if they wanted to. But the idea that this is some kind of an imminent threat that required a military action at this time is nonsense. I mean, not just because they could simply go back to the Iran nuclear deal, but that they, even without that, they're some time away from it. Then there's the whole question: what if they do get a nuclear weapon? I mean, the Russians have thousands of nuclear weapons, and we say, don't worry about it. We have a nuclear deterrent. Israel has a nuclear deterrent. The idea that they would, have some kind of suicidal first strike against Israel is nuts. What we don't want is to have a nuclear deterrent that would prevent the United States from Israel from invading and bombing and doing whatever they want in the region. So really, this is really this is not about protecting Israel or protecting the United States from a nuclear threat.
I think to your earlier point, Professor, even Tulsi Gabbard, the president's own national intelligence director, has come out recent days and say, no, this really isn't as imminent as you might think. The president of the United States undercutting his own director of national intelligence. This has given some consternation in Washington.
Definitely, though he could have done what Bush did and basically rewrote the intelligence to fit his narrative. But this is this does underscore that this is not a strategic decision at all. It was a political decision. And it'll be very interesting to see how the Democratic leadership in Congress reacts. I mean, polls show less than 10% of less than 25% of Americans, less than 10% of Democrats supported military action. Schumer, the Senate Democratic leader, and Jeffries, a House Democratic leader, as well as a number of prominent senators, Fetterman, Schiff, Rosen, others, are defending what Israel did, saying what Israel did was in self-defense, and we can't let Iran get a nuclear weapon, and not even mentioning going back to the original nuclear deal. So there does seem to be this bipartisan consensus on certain levels that rejects the traditional non-proliferation, which through diplomacy, to a kind of counter-proliferation where we have a kind of nuclear apartheid we can impose on various parts of the world, saying we can say who has, Iran and Israel and Pakistan and India can have nuclear weapons, but we won't even allow Iran to have a nuclear program that simply has the potential of weaponization.
Stephen Zunes, professor of politics and director of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. In just a couple of minutes, we have to wrap this up. But very quickly, if we can, I want to get your perspective on two things. Already, AOC saying tonight, quote unquote, is absolutely and clearly grounds for impeachment, unquote, of Trump tonight. You mentioned this earlier. You have people like the Democratic leader of the House, Hakeem Jeffries, seemingly tangentially sanctioning what Trump did earlier tonight with these Iranian strikes. And you have the progressive left calling this out and saying this is grounds for impeachment. That's the first part of it. Secondly, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what should Americans, what should Wisconsinites be looking for, watching for in the next 12 to 24 hours?
Well, domestically, again, we'll see what the reaction is from Congress. And of course, there are Republican opponents as well, because remember, Trump got the nomination in 2016 and defeated Hillary Clinton that same year on the grounds that he opposed wars like Iraq that his Republican opponents and his Democratic opponent supported. And indeed, even during his campaign this past fall, he said the Democrats are the party of endless Middle Eastern wars. I'm the candidate for peace. And so that was a key factor in getting white working class voters in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Ohio, in the northern swing states, to switch from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party, because it was their sons and daughters who were fighting and dying in these wars. So there's going to no doubt be going to be some pushbacks within the MAGA crowd to some degree. At the same time, they are notorious for rallying around Trump, whatever he does. So it probably won't be a huge backlash, but it'll certainly be room for debate. So it'll be interesting to see how things are transpire in Washington. But the bigger question, what's going to happen in the Middle East, again, will be depending on the extent of the ineffectiveness of the Iranian retaliation, how many Americans are killed, how Trump will respond. And because I think really the pro-war versus anti-war debate, unfortunately, is not going to go come down to, you know, what's legal or what's strategic, what's rational, but it does come, it simply comes down to American casualties. And so I think that will be and how long a war you know, goes on. So I think that is really the big question right now.
We're hearing already tonight that the Democrats in the House and the Senate on the Intelligence Committee in particular say they were not briefed before the attacks tonight, per sources being reported. Professor Zunes, anything I have not asked you tonight you think is critical in the situation right now for our listeners across Wisconsin?
I think one thing to emphasize is this was not done on behalf of Israel. I mean, obviously, Israel and its supporters here in the United States are important allies for the United States in its regional policies. But the United States has been going after Iran for many, many years, simply because it goes back to the whole the Bush administration's national security strategy in 2002, where very clearly we would not allow for the emergence of any regional rival that would get in the way of our prerogatives in important strategic areas like the Middle East. I really think this confrontation would have happened, you know, regardless of Netanyahu, regardless of AIPAC, this is really first and foremost about hegemony. I mean, just think about how obsessed we've been with Cuba all these decades, and with Nicaragua under the Sandinistas in the 80s. I mean, these are very poor countries, but they did not accept American hegemony, and that's what made them the enemy. And similarly, that's what Iran, this is the situation with Iran, against a horrible regime. I've been an outspoken critic of it. I've worked closely with these brave dissidents who have been challenging it, and people who have been died and tortured and exiled and everything. But so there's no excuses for the regime. But given some of the regimes we support in that part of the world, the Saudis, the Egyptians, the Moroccans, the Emiratis, et cetera, you know, this is certainly not about human rights or anything like that either. You know, this is an assertion of empire and effect. And we've seen when we've done that before, the consequences have been pretty awful.
Stephen Zunes, Professor of Politics and Director of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. We thank you for your time tonight, Professor. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay safe, and we'll hope to have you back soon.
My pleasure.
Stephen Zunes joining us live via StreamYard at the University of San Francisco. Again, to recap tonight, the United States has launched strikes on 3 Iranian nuclear facilities. President Trump said earlier tonight, we have completed, quote, we have completed a very successful attack on the 3 nuclear sites in Iran, including the 3 locations being named there on his Truth Social tonight. According to the president, quote, all planes are now outside of Iran airspace. A full payload of bombs was dropped on the primary site, Fordo. All planes are safely on their way home. He marks his congratulations to, as he says, our great American warriors, unquote. The president has spoken, and that is going to wrap up our coverage tonight. We're going to rejoin our friends at Max Inc. Radio, our regular programming along the network. But keep it here. This is going to be fluid as we anticipate the next 12 to 24 hours. Civic Media News, along with our partners at ABC and CBS, will be here to keep you informed as the evening goes along. For now, for Civic Media News, for all of our colleagues along the way, including all the people that help make this possible, we appreciate the broadcast and stay with us. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, did you guess? It takes 10 pounds of milk, which is a big gallon jug plus a little bit more, to make 1 pound of squeaky cheese curds. Call me your curd girl for this slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow human some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Let's get back to the ballpark and more Wisconsin Rapids Raptors baseball on WFHR.
And in the top of the ninth here, it's a 14-3 lead for the Chinooks. They're feeling pretty good about this this game right now, and the Raptors here at home, they are looking for something to go their way as Espen Simpson is back out there. Simpson, so far this game, he hasn't been too bad. He just allowed that two-run shot back earlier in the game, and that's really the difference in his performance so far. The two-run shot came from Brody Rasmussen back in the seventh inning, and that are the only two runs on the line of Simpson. 0-1 count on the way home to Tyler Preece is fouled back. Brings the count 0-2, and Preece up. For the sixth time today, he is 4-for-5 from the plate. Well, safe to say, it's been a good night for him. Preece entered today batting .376, and it's only going to go up, but this one, a grounder over to second, takes an odd hop, but Ruiz is able to adjust, make the catch, and throw on over to first in time for out number one. And Ruiz slick with the glove there, and good to see him back in his natural position over at second base, and tried out switching up the defensive alignment, playing Eric Parker at second. He wasn't too bad over at second. Made a couple of nice plays over there, and no errors from him, and maybe will be the spot moving forward as the first pitch to Drew Reynolds misses outside for ball number one. And Reynolds, the left-handed hitting first baseman for the Chinooks. It's a lefty-righty matchup. Simpson trying to finish it off, but that one misses inside for ball number two. 2-0 to Reynolds. And Reynolds, he has been struggling from the plate in terms of batting average, batting just .179 on the season, but his five home runs lead the Northwoods League. 2-0 count is fouled back to bring it 2-1. And Reynolds today, he's just 1-for-5 from the plate. He had his single in the sixth inning, and well, his last time up, he struck out swinging in the seventh. He struck out twice in this game, and also flew out to right field one time. 2-1 count is fouled back. Now 2-2. Reynolds from the University of Maine and hoping to make something happen on this Chinooks team that has gotten that offense right back on track. And you go back to that game where they won against Wausau. They scored 7 runs. They won 7-5, but really it was the pitching that stood out, holding Wausau back. Wausau only had 5 hits in the game. 2-2 count coming home. This one is hammered towards center field. Running back out, and at the warning track, it is caught in deep center field by Gunnar Miro. And Drew Reynolds nearly had another homer, but instead it's just a flyout. And there's now two away with the bases empty in the top of the ninth inning. Well, the Raptors, it's not likely that they come back and win this game. However, never say never. Never say never. That's what we like to say here. But the first pitch to Brody Rasmussen is fouled to make it an 0-1 count. But the Raptors very well can be looking forward to their next game, which will be against the Chinooks. And, well, at the moment in time, Dylan Escobar was actually the guy scheduled to be starting tomorrow. Pop up towards second base, and it's caught by Ruiz for out number three. So they go three up, three down in the ninth inning. Espen Simpson goes ahead and finishes it out, and Simpson goes 3 2/3 innings in the game, allowing just 2 runs. Pretty good performance from him, and that heads us into the bottom of the ninth. 3 outs to go. Raptors have to score 11 when we come back here on WFHR Wisconsin Rap.
Hi, I'm Ashley, and I want to talk to you about your business. Are you a business owner who lies awake at night worried about your business uncertainties? Do you know who your target audience is or how to reach them? Don't waste another night's sleep. Call me at 715-496-0710 so I can show you the tools and information you need. We offer radio, digital, and streaming services that will help you stand out. With my education and experience, I'll help you create a solid plan tailored for your business. Because cookie cutters are for the holidays, not for business needs. Call today and let those uncertainties melt away. 715-496-0710.
At WFHR and WIRI, our advertisers are part of our family, so come join the family by calling Ashley today at 715-496-0710.
You wanted to be cool, which led you to smoking, which led to a pack a day. Then you met that special someone, which led to starting a life with them, which led to wanting to live longer, which led to quitting. Then you heard you may be at risk for lung cancer, which led you to getting a low-dose CT scan. If you smoked, get scanned. Talk to your doctor and learn more at savedbythescan.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
I'm Scarlett Johansson. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. You can join the movement to end hunger by donating, volunteering, and advocating. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
And Patty C., Pat Costin leading off the inning in the bottom of the ninth. Costin from Indiana University sends the first one over to second base, picked up, and back on to first in time for out number one. One pitch, one out. In the bottom of the ninth, 4-3 on the putout, and it brings up Royce Clayton Jr. with one away and the base is empty. Rafters down 14-3. Dylan Escobar looking to finish it up. He has been good tonight, and, well, I mentioned it slightly earlier, he was scheduled to be their starter tomorrow. However, that likely not going to happen anymore. Legally, it's allowed as he is only thrown 26 pitches so far. This one on the outside edge for strike number one. However, don't really think it's going to happen. Clayton, the right-handed hitting left fielder at the plate. 0-1 count is taken for strike number two. 0-2, and looking back at the way that it happened, the Rafters and Chinooks were kind of trading scores in the beginning of the game. It was 1-0, then 2-1 Rafters, then 4-2, and Lakeshore just kept it going from there on out. Eventually took an 8-2 lead. That 8-2 lead became 12-2 in the middle of the sixth. Rafters finally scored their third run of the game as that one is inside for ball number two, a 2-2 count. And after scoring that one run, Lakeshore responded with two more of their own to take the 14-3 lead. Since then, it's been a shutout game, and that's four full half innings as this one is fouled away by Royce Clayton and count remains 2-2. So Rafters will take on a different pitcher other than Dylan Escobar tomorrow. Also, Espen Simpson for the Rafters, worth noting, was also scheduled to be the starter. So both of the team's relievers tonight who came into the game were scheduled to be starters tomorrow as this one is fouled back and keeps it 2-2. So we have no idea who's going to be pitching. It could really be anyone. And what I was saying earlier, I thought Tristan Krusenberry had a shot to come into tonight's game. He might be the new starter for tomorrow based on the way that things are looking. Could be. Not saying that he will be. 2-2 count misses away to Clayton. Brings it back 3-2. And for Lakeshore, they'll have to make a new decision. Nate Gray was initially scheduled to be the starter for today, and then he was moved to being a batter only. 3-2 count. This one's hit towards center field by Clayton, and it's a liner that's caught right in center field. And good piece on that one, but couldn't find open grass, and there is two away in the bottom of the ninth. Rafters down to their last out, and staring down a loss number 18 on the season. And officially, you get to the point in the season right now where you start looking at elimination numbers for the first half. And, of course, 36 games will be played in the first half of the season. And Madison already up to 16 wins on the year. And taking a look at the scoreboard, Madison got win number 17 thanks to the no-hitter from Isaac Milburn. That pitch misses to Chris Diaz for ball number one. So 17 wins for them means the worst that they could go is 17-19. And with the Rafters eyeing down the loss here, they would get loss number 18 on the season, which would put them just one game away, two games away from elimination. That pitch, low and inside, it's a 3-0 count. So if the Rafters lose both tonight and tomorrow and Madison wins, then officially Rafters are eliminated from the first half playoff crown, as this one is in there for strike number one, brings it to a 3-1 count. So really not looking likely that the Rafters will win the first half of the season for the Great Lakes West. Might already be impossible, as this one is crushed towards right field. See you later. This one is not coming back for a long, long time. So Chris Diaz adds one run at the end of the game here after Clayton's line out and solo shot to right field. Home run there, and it's a big one, but if only it were a closer game right now, you'd feel a lot better about that. It would be a real momentum changer. However, you'll still take a home run whenever you can get them. And Chris Diaz sent that one sky high over the right field wall. So still two outs in the bottom of the ninth inning. It's 14-4 now. The Chinooks have a 10-run lead. Estimated distance, 383 feet. 98 miles an hour off the bat as this one misses low and outside for ball number one. Chris Diaz, an absolutely huge home run. 1-0 count is in there for a strike, makes it 1-1 on Oñate. Oñate, the left-handed hitting shortstop, up for the fifth time today and 1-for-4 in the game. And Chris Diaz with that home run there ended his 0-for-4 start to the game. That a breaking ball that drops in there for strike number two. A 1-2 count. Rafters down to their last strike. Down 10 runs in the bottom of the ninth. And Escobar looking to finish it off. 1-2 count is fouled off. And officially, Dylan Escobar is in line for a save. He's gone the necessary three innings despite the large lead. So he just needs to finish it off here for the save. 1-2 count with two outs. Pitch on the way. It is sent down the third base line, but foul. And the 1-2 count remains with two outs and nobody on. Oñate had a home run over that right field wall earlier in the season, back in that game against Traverse City. And the second game, it was a huge shot. Not a power hitter, though, and swings and misses at this pitch for strike number three, and that does it for the game. The Rafters lose 14-4, the final score, and they can't win back-to-back games, so they drop back into the losing column. And now on the season, the Rafters unfortunately going in the wrong direction. 8-18 on the season. The Chinooks now 10-17, and the Rafters 1.5 games back of the Chinooks for moving up in the standings in the Great Lakes West. Once again, final score 14-4. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have the post-game show coming your way here from Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR 97.5 FM 1320.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party. You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Wisconsin Rapids Raptors Baseball on WFHR.
Well, game over here in Wisconsin Rapids. It was not a good news Saturday night. Bad news from Witterfield. Final score 14-4. The Lakeshore Chinooks take down the Raptors, and their elimination number down to 2 games as the Madison Mallards have won the game tonight. And that's for the first half of the playoffs. Still second half around, and that was something that Andre Meduño had mentioned early during our pregame show. There's still a lot to play for, and the reason that this first half is still going to matter, because if the Raptors come out and have a great second half, then they're going to need every win from the first half in the case that they don't win the second half crown, and it happens to be the same team right now between Madison and Wausau at the top of the subdivision, but Wausau has been struggling a little bit, so looking more and more like it's going to be Madison. Still anyone's game, though, and if Madison were able to win back-to-back times, then it would go to whoever had the best overall record. But that's why every game is still going to matter, even if the Raptors do get eliminated from the first half crown and from that automatic playoff spot. And for those of you who don't know, the playoff alignment for the playoffs, whoever is crowned the champion of the first half will have a spot, and whoever is crowned the champion of the second half will have an automatic playoff spot. And that is in each subdivision. So the Great Lakes West, that will have whoever wins each half. That's what we're looking at for a playoff berth. And right now the Raptors looking in the wrong direction, hoping to get themselves some momentum heading into the second half. And they're going to need some bigger wins as they look to take on the Lakeshore Chinooks once again tomorrow. Taking a look back at how it happened, in the first inning, the Chinooks took a 1-0 lead. They had 4 straight hits to begin the game off of Brennan Cohen before he retired 3 in a row. It was 1-0. Then in the bottom of the first, the Raptors responded with 2 of their own, both Mason Onyade and Noah Ruiz coming home to score on a weird throw down to third base that ended up in left field. Then in the top of the second inning, the Chinooks added three more runs thanks to a two RBI single from Beckett Zvorek and an RBI sack fly from Kyle Miklas off of Brennan Cohen. Rafters went scoreless in the second, third, fourth, fifth innings before they finally scored in the sixth. But prior to that, in the third and fourth innings, the Rafters held the Chinooks scoreless. Third inning, Brennan Cohen finally able to find his footing and then hands it off to Morales, who went in the fourth inning and did not allow a run there. But fifth inning comes around, top of the fifth, four runs come across for the Chinooks on an RBI single from Beckett Zvorek before a three-run shot from David Hogg over that left field wall made it an 8-2 lead for them in the middle of the fifth. And then in the top of the sixth, another four runs come across off of the line of Alejandro Morales. And, well, it was not his finest day as he allowed the RBI double from Brody Rasmussen, RBI sack fly from Nate Gray, and an RBI double from Esteban Garcia before Espen Simpson came into the game. And Simpson allowed the fly out, allowed an RBI single to Beckett Zvorek, and then got a strikeout to end the sixth inning. So at the end of that, it was 12-2. Bottom of the sixth, the Rafters do manage one more run on an RBI bases-loaded walk from Royce Clayton. But from there, they would go scoreless until the ninth. Then, top of the seventh comes around, another two runs come home for the Chinooks. They add a two-run shot from Brody Rasmussen, his second and third RBIs on the game. That made it 14-3. And then in the bottom of the ninth, the Rafters down that same score, and Chris Diaz added a solo home run to right field with two outs, but it wasn't near enough to make the necessary 11-run comeback. So final score, 14-4. Looking back at the stats and how it all happened, the Rafters had a couple of players really have good performances from the plate. Chris Diaz had that home run, of course, but along with that, Eric Parker went two for three from the plate. Pat Costin drew a pair of walks, and he was on multiple times in the game. And on the pitching side, Brennan Cohen, four runs allowed over three innings. He only walked one batter, only four walks as a staff overall, but they allowed 20 hits to the Chinooks. Espen Simpson actually had a pretty good performance out of the bullpen. He allowed 3 2/3 innings pitched. Well, he went 3 2/3 innings. He allowed just two runs. Both were earned on four hits, one walk, and three strikeouts. So he continued his strong play, going a lot longer than initially anticipated, as they had considered using him as the starter tomorrow, and likely not going to be the case, and actually 100% won't be the case, as he went over his necessary pitch count to not be allowed back out for tomorrow's game. He threw 59 pitches in the game, and none of Cohen, Morales, or Simpson will be going tomorrow, as they all threw over 50. And on the other side, Nate Ciemne threw 97 pitches through his 5 2/3 innings, and he was great out there before the Rafters finally chased him from the game and then handed it off to Dylan Escobar, who went 3 1/3, allowing just one run on one hit and one walk. Good stuff overall from the Chinooks, and they blow out the Rafters. Final score 14-4. Tomorrow night, not night, it'll be tomorrow afternoon, 3:05 game time, which means we'll have the pregame show coming your way on WFHR at 2:50 p.m. So hope to have you tuned in then. It's going to be an exciting one, and we'll figure out who the pitchers are going to be tomorrow, and of course have a breakdown for you as well, along with all of the other great stuff that we have as part of our pregame show and the game in totality. Rafters Chinooks run it back for game two of the series here at Witter Field. But that's going to do it for our broadcast tonight. Big shout out to everyone who helped make this broadcast possible, and for making everything work so smoothly, and always great to get to be on the air here on WFHR. Huge shout out, of course, to our hosts at WFHR for allowing the Rafters broadcasts here and ever since the start of Rafters baseball here in Wisconsin Rapids. But one more time, the final score, 14-4. That's going to do it for tonight. For myself, Austin Thomas, and for the rest of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters, thank you and have a great rest of your night.
Medication better than visualization. Get me on a vacation. Sometimes life can bring you down. You gotta pack your stuff and get out of town. You're not running away, 'cause you'll be back. You'll be stronger and wiser after you realize.
instead of pine, sand instead of snow. Watching the waves and walking in the wet, all the bad things are easy to forget. Better than a staycation, better than medication, better than visualization. Get me on a vacation, better than a staycation, better than medication, better than visualization. Get me on a vacation. Hey Beth, Mai Tais or Pina Coladas?
Pina Coladas all the way.
That's going to do it for us here on Mag Sync Radio. Next up is a super handsome host. And make sure you use that Civic Media app and connect with him. Send him lots of messages. After all, we can't have him falling asleep on the couch again. It's the After Hour Show of Mag Sync Radio. After this on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Don't fall back in the spot.
lies. Oh, they're just little lies. Oh, they're just little lies. Oh, oh, they're just little lies. Oh, they're just little lies. Oh, they're just little lies. Oh, how can you look me in the eyes and bend reality at your whim? Straddle the line between the life you lead and the fantasy that you're in. It's such a subversive form of abuse. Oh, you never trust me with the truth. Oh, they're just little lies. Oh, just little lies. Oh, they're just little lies. Oh, oh, they're just little lies. Oh, they're just little lies. Oh, they're just little lies. Oh, the shackles of alibis and cover-ups will bind and weigh you down. They say that the cold heart set you free from the web you've woven around. Learn how it feels to tell it straight. Oh, oh, oh. Roll down your chips and raise the stakes. Oh, they're just little lies. Oh, they're just little lies. Oh,
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies.
Ah!
And you might think you can avoid that coffee stain until... Oh, really? You can't escape a lot of things in life. But you can escape prediabetes. Prediabetes captures 1 in 3 adults. There are usually no signs of prediabetes. In fact, most people don't even know they have it. But with early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Take action by taking the 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. You might not be able to escape having this song stuck in your head, but you can escape prediabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Peter King. President Trump is about to address the nation with more details on the American attack on Iran's nuclear sites, something he announced just over 2 hours ago on social media. Here's CBS's Linda Kenyon.
The president has ordered the U.S. military to strike 3 nuclear sites in Iran, joining Israel's effort to destroy Iran's nuclear program. The decision to strike follows more than a week of Israeli attacks against Iran's nuclear and military sites, and strong words from Trump, who repeated Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. In a post on Truth Social, the president wrote, "We have completed our very successful attack. He also wrote, "All planes are safely on their way home. Congratulations to our great American warriors." Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
Sources tell us that B-2s dropped two bunker busters on each of the three sites tonight. CBS News Middle East reporter Courtney Keeley.
It's something